You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Welcome to Line Noise. My guest this week is none other than Tim Reaper, aka Ed. I ask him a bit about that. Who is his debut album. Yeah, he said it's his debut album. In full effect, with Cloak comes out in September this month. And we sat down one Monday morning to talk about all kinds of things, really, about DJing at weddings, about being retro or not being retro, about his sort of fascinating story about getting into jungle, about obsession, about what it was like to see a jungle DJ for the first time after sort of very much studying the genre as he did. And the album is absolutely excellent. Really interesting how it was made as well. It's first jungle album on Hyperdub. So thanks very much to Tim, Ed, for doing the interview, and I hope you enjoy it. So I don't know, should I call you Ed or should I call you Tim? Real name or stage name, I guess.
I usually say to people just whatever comes to your mind first, Tim or Ed. I don't really have any preference, really.
The funny thing was, I always assumed your real name was Tim and it was like Tim Smith and you just put on the Reaper bit on the end. But where did it come from, Tim Reaper?
So I wanted to have like sort of clever wordplay kind of name, like Ed Rush, but like I wanted to try and think of something as clever as that. But of course, I couldn't. So Tim Reaper will have to do. It's meant to be a pun on Grim Reaper, but I think, yeah, people just like you think it's just my actual name, but I don't really mind. It is what it is.
It's good. It's not quite Ed Rush levels, but you know, Ed Rush is a great name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. Which I thought of at first.
Well, yeah, but you're probably not. Were you alive back when sort of Ed Rush was doing his thing?
When he was first starting his tunes, like 92. I was born in 93, so I think he'd had some music out by then. So, nah, I don't think so, unfortunately.
I've got another sort of, it's kind of quite a basic naming question, and it makes me feel a bit stupid asking it, but I'm going to go for it anyway, because I'm old enough to remember, like to basically remember, you know, the start of jungle and the start of drum and bass. And to be honest with you, for most of the time, I use the terms interchangeably, jungle and drum and bass.
Yeah.
It's only in the last few years I've sort of started to actually think about it. And it's like, you know, I could probably do a big definition of what the difference is, but I still just tend to use them like interchangeably. You use jungle, right, always, rather than drum and bass. What, why is that?
I think because a lot of the music I make very much takes huge influence from the years before drum and bass has really popularized as a term. I mean, I understand that it could be used interchangeably nowadays because the lines are a bit more blurred than it was back then. But like, I think for me, I remember early days when I was going raves, and sometimes you would go to an event that was billed as jungle, and really in your mind, what you wanted was old school jungle, but you'd get there and you'd get newer forms of jungle that sort of been taken somewhere else. You'd sort of feel a bit deflated by the fact that like it was billed as jungle, but you didn't get it. So I think that when I say jungle for what I'm doing, I guess I sort of try and distinctly say that this is stuff that I guess sounds like the stuff that was made between like the 93, 94, 95, 96 ish years, whatever rough period you define that as jungle. And as much as I do like drum and bass as well, the newer stuff that's coming out now, that jungle from the 90s is probably my main thing, I'd say.
Because you are one of these DJs that really kind of crosses over. Like I've seen you playing sort of festivals where you don't get a lot of jungle drum and bass. And I've also seen that you've played like, you know, really big jungle drum and bass events where it's kind of all of that all night. Like, there aren't many people that do that, right? That can do that crossover?
Not really. I've noticed that like a lot of times when I may be one of few artists on the bill for a multi-genre festival playing jungle, if there is other people on that billing that are also from the jungle scene, it's usually the same names each time. I think maybe I think it depends really, because I think sometimes it can take quite a lot of luck and I guess effort as well to cross over into the attention of people from outside of the music you do, even when it comes to like people from like the Latin club scene and like other styles of music where it's like there's a whole scene going on, but most people that aren't really tapped into that scene may only just know the same like two or three names that have really elevated themselves above that. So I guess maybe I've become one of those names, but it hasn't really been something that's been afforded to like everyone else in my scene really.
Because I was interested to see that you remixed Sub Focus in 2021, who is a name I very much associate with kind of modern drum and bass. That's an interesting meeting of minds. How did that come about?
Yeah, so I got contacted by Sub Focus's manager, Seb, who I actually used to know from years back because he was running a drum and bass YouTube channel that I submitted some tunes for. And at the time, Sub Focus was compiling like a remixes album called Reworks, and he wanted me to do a remix of Last Jungle for it. So I did one and he liked it, but he had some changes he wanted to suggest. So I made the changes and then he was like, I like this version, but I also like bits of the other version. So maybe you could combine the two to sort of make one version that I like. And then I did that. Then he sort of wanted to make some changes to it. So I sent it over to him, all the parts and stuff. And then I don't think he had the time really to make the changes, or it wasn't coming as easily as he hoped it was. So in the end, that remix didn't make it onto the album. But around that time, I had done a stream for Mixmag, and I think I played that remix in my set, and I'd also sent the tune out to a few people. So I think Nia Archives, I think she played it on Radio 1. So it got people knowing that this remix exists, but there was no release plan. So there's like quite a few people asking time after time, like, what's going on with this? And eventually I ended up just taking a random stab in the dark and asking Seb and Nick, Sub Focus, that if I could release my remix on Future Retro London, and also if I could get another remix done for the B-side as well. And they were actually up for it. I didn't expect that, but they were very much like willing to allow me to do it. So I got Coco Bryce to do the remix for the B-side, and it came out, and it was like, it was a real curveball release, because I imagine like when people think of Future Retro now, the idea of Sub Focus being an artist on the label feels very alien. But I guess in the context of like two jungle remixes of one of his tunes, and the original was sort of like 140 BPM jungle breaks kind of style, I think it sort of made sense in the end, really.
You're a very patient man. I think if someone had been saying that to someone, you know, something I'd done, I've probably just got in a bad mood and stormed out of the room or something.
Yeah, I've had to deal with quite a few remixes where there's a lot of back and forth, and I think, yeah, I'm a very patient person.
I mean, yeah. Going back to the beginning, how did you get into jungle? It's quite an interesting story.
Yeah, so like for my GCSEs, I was doing a media studies course, and one of the coursework assignments we had to do was you had to get two different magazines in the entertainment industry and sort of write an essay comparing the differences. And I had Mixmag and Metal Hammer, and on the Mixmag magazine they usually have like the cover CDs, or they have like a mix from like whatever DJ, and that month they happened to have a mix CD by Andy C. So out of curiosity I just listened to it to see what it was saying, and I just couldn't believe the energy of the music and just the intensity of it all. I was so taken in that like I had to find out so much more about whatever this music was called. And from then on it was just like everything changed. Like I'd come home from school every day and I'd just be like researching drum and bass artists, researching jungle artists, labels, DJs, all this kind of stuff, just to sort of take in as much as I could in such a short period as possible. I was basically like binging this music because I was so fascinated by it. I had to know everything about it. I had to hear all the music. I had to hear all the tunes. And I was too young at that point to go raving. I was about 15, 16 at that point. So a lot of it was just down to like me browsing YouTube, browsing Discogs, browsing like mixes and stuff, just to sort of hear the music because I couldn't go to the clubs at the time.
It sounds, in a way, like quite a lonely thing, right? not, you know, sort of heartbreakingly lonely, but you know what I mean? Like, you were kind of doing it by yourself. Was it a bit like that? Were you, what did your friends say? Did you try to get your friends into it, or did you just kind of, you know?
I'd play thumb drum based tunes to people at school, and most of them weren't keen on it. I guess sometimes it's luck of the draw when you're presented this really bizarre music, whether or not it like catches your attention enough or not. So yeah, I guess in a way it was lonely, because I know a lot of people, they get into this music through their mates or through like older brothers or sisters, or through, I don't know, even sometimes parents. For me, it's just like discovery on my own, and then just like, maybe that also made me so like invested in it, because like there was no dependency on anyone else to sort of put me on. It was just like I have to make my own knowledge and like my own like time to really check for it. So I just did it wholeheartedly, really.
Are you quite an obsessive person generally? Like, if you find something you like, do you have to find out everything about it, or was it just sort of something about jungle?
I can be obsessive, but I think jungle was the first thing that I was so obsessed about that took up the entirety of my time, because I did have hobbies beforehand. I did have other styles of music I was into. I was into grime before I was into jungle, and I was also into like just your general R&B and hip hop and stuff. And I did like that stuff, but like I didn't seek it out as much. I think also with those, it was because like it was so readily available. You could find it on the radio, you could find it on the music TV channels, you could hear it on like chart CD compilation. So it's like when it's just given to you, it's just easy. And with drum and bass and jungle, I couldn't just find it so easily. I had to really look out for it and search it and hunt it down. So I guess it required a bit more effort to get involved. So I guess that required me to become obsessive in a way to really sort of deal with how much I wanted to find out about it, really.
I mean, it's sort of an interesting there's a coincidence, interesting thing that you're doing, you know, this project, and you kind of came across the CD. But like, do you reckon you would have got into it some point anyway, you know, got into jungle music?
I have no idea, really, because my older brother, he was into drum bass a few years before me when he was going to university in Bristol. But like, we never really shared much musical taste or crossover, or really did much musical stuff together. And also, like, when I went to university, most of the events at the clubs in the area were just like whatever music was popular at the time. So I feel like my ability to just stumble upon drum and bass, it could have happened, but I'm not sure how it would have happened after that point, I think. And also, like, I probably would have just maybe become fascinated with, like, I don't know, something else maybe, and that would have like sort of closed off my mind to the idea of maybe becoming so curious about something like this.
Presumably because it was kind of that time of your life as well, when you had time to sort of investigate something.
Yeah, exactly, because I was still in school, so like after school was done, it's just like you have all the time to yourself, really, to a degree, but like didn't have like a day job or anything like that, or like really any kind of like commitments that come with like being like an adult or anything like that. So like all your time is sort of yours to do as you please, and like rather than going out and hanging with my mates and like doing stuff, I'll just stay in on the computer all day and just browse music stuff, really.
Where did you go to university?
I went to university, it's called Brunel University, it's in Uxbridge, Middlesex, just like the edge of West London, and I was studying computer science. I was really into computers when I was young, but like I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, so I sort of just did computer science in the hope of working out at some point, okay, this is the area I want to go down. And that area was web development, because at the time I'd also started doing a bit of like graphic design and stuff on my own time, really. And like web development is really like the only, I guess, area, or the only module on my course where I felt like having like a visual eye was something that could actually benefit you as well. So I sort of gravitated more to web development, and I was doing that as a job after uni for about 9 years until last year when I went full time with music.
Do you think that being good at computers and being kind of very interested in helped you in making music? Because obviously, you know, a lot of it is computer based, but I don't know if it's like very different kind of skills.
The skills are very different, but I think the habits of being at home on the computer all day online, I think that really played into getting into music like this, because I would spend like 12, 14 hours a day maybe on like a free day on the computer. I still sort of am like that to a degree when I'm in. It's pretty much always computer. So I guess in a way that did help. It's a lot of time, I know.
I was just saying, I have to tell my kids to get off the computer, so maybe they'll never become web designers or producers. We'll see. When did you first see someone DJ Jungle or Drum and Bass live?
So like a few weeks after I turned 18, I knew of this event series called Jungle Syndicate. They were doing events in London and Bristol and Leeds, and that was the first I ever went to in London, and it was at this venue called the Rhythm Factory in Whitechapel. And the first DJ I saw there was actually someone who I befriended online. His name is Dward, who I make music with still to this day. Yeah. And yeah, so when I went into the club, he was on playing with someone else, and that was my first proper club experience. And it was amazing. I really enjoyed it. But the thing is, basically, I was still living with my mum at that point. I hadn't gone to uni yet. So I told my mum I'd be home for like 2 a.m. So I think I probably was at the event for like 2 and a bit hours and I came home. But I really still did enjoy it. And then when I went to uni, then I started fully enjoying events.
Because I'm interested, like you've done so much kind of research and you knew all the mixes and presumably you'd seen videos of things. But like, was it still really different when you actually saw it live?
Oh yeah, massively, because like a lot of my music at home was consumed through headphones. I didn't really have speakers, and even if I did, the idea of blasting Jungle and drum bass whilst my mum and gran are in the other room watching EastEnders, this wasn't going to happen really. So like, it was the first proper time I really heard music played out loud, and also the fact that I was like amongst other people also dancing and stuff, it really elevated the music in a way that I couldn't really replicate at home on my own, just listening to tunes on my Apple earphones.
Yeah, suddenly you realise what all the bass lines are about.
Oh yeah, exactly that. And also about the mixing as well, because I guess mixes at home are quite cool, but when you're actually there seeing the DJ actually mix and also sort of like, in a way, bouncing off of the energy of the crowd, it just sort of adds another dimension of depth to it.
Taking things up to the present day, you have got an album with Clone in full effect coming out September, I think, October?
Yeah, September 20th. Also Cloak, by the way, not Clone.
Sorry, did I say Clone? Cloak. Excuse me.
Yeah, Cloak, oh, yeah.
Excuse me.
That's all good.
It's a really excellent record. Do you consider it your debut album? Because, I mean, I was looking on Discogs and there's a couple of things for you that are under albums, but I didn't know if you considered them as albums. Terrors of the Jungle Volume 1 and Your Tape with Yosh, they're both sort of listed as albums.
No, I'd say this is a debut album. Terrors in the Jungle was actually Kid Lib's album, but I just had a track or two on that, so I guess I got billed as like featuring on that, on his album. But like, yeah, this is my first ever album, and like, to be honest, I never really saw myself as like an album artist in a way, because like I just felt like I didn't really know how to approach albums, and even though I have quite a few albums on CDs, I never really consumed them in the way a lot of other people consume albums, sort of know how I'd put one together or if I'd have like some sort of concept or theme around it. So like, the way this album came about was like, I was actually compiling Cloak's album from Future Retro London on Rhythm. And I went to Australia and New Zealand last year on a tour. I got to meet Cloak for the first time in person, having made a few tunes of him over the internet. And like, I got to go to a studio in Melbourne, and we made a tune together, but we're also playing through a lot of, he was playing through a lot of tunes he'd done. And I noticed they were all in like this one big folder of like thousands of files. So I was like, what's going on with this folder? You've got loads of music in it. And he's like, every time he works with someone, he basically exports it into this folder. And he's been doing that for years. And like, most of it's never come out. So I was just like, well, I mean, you got to give me the folder then. And he's like, he laughed. And I was like, I mean it. I'm not leaving without that folder. But I mean, he gave me a few hundred tracks from that folder. I think he was able to work out which ones were like the jungle ones, because he also makes like house and techno and dubstep as well. And also just ambient like interludes and stuff. But like, he gave me a few hundred tracks, and I ended up like listening to that over the process of like a month and a bit, like whittling it down, like categorizing it into tiers of like good, great, amazing, and then just like whittling it down to 12 that I really, really liked. But on the side of that, I also made like a folder of tunes I really liked that it weren't like finished, because like I didn't rule out the idea of him like finishing some stuff for the album, but in the end, we didn't really need to. Then at the same time, I was doing back to backs with Code9, Steve, who runs Hyperdub, and we did one at Unsound Festival in Poland, and we did another one at The Cause in London, and then after the second one, it was like, we probably like DJed more than we've ever actually talked in person, so would you be up for meeting up? And I was like, yeah, sure, because he lives in Peckham, and at the time I was living in Sydney, and we're both in Southeast London. So when I went to meet up with him, we were chatting and getting to know each other and stuff. He mentioned like, there's an open invite for you if you ever want to do like an EP or an LP on Hyperdub, whatever you want, let's get it started, basically. So then I remembered this folder of unfinished tracks that Cloak had done, and I was like, maybe I could just finish all of these tunes and then just give them to Code9, and you could just like work out a release out of it. And then that's basically what we ended up doing, really.
I think you said, I read the interview with Sean Ronaldo, really enjoyed that. They were like the first tunes you sent over to Code9, basically first eight tunes. He was like, yep, that's it. Great.
Yeah, because really what I wanted to aim for was like 40 to 50 tunes. To sort of give to Code9, sort of listen through all of it and then work out what he wanted. But like, I realized like it'd taken like about just under a year to get to like the 25 tune mark. And because I was so busy with gigs and Future Retro, I wasn't able to fully dedicate myself to just work on this album. So I managed to get like 20, 25 tracks done off of what Cloak had started. And then I realized it's been a year and Code9 hasn't heard anything from us. So let me just send him what we've done so far, just to sort of see if we're on the right track, and then that'll give us, I guess, more motivation and more direction to know what to do going forward. So we sent him the 25 tracks, and he was like, these eight will do. And I'm like, oh, fair enough then.
Album done, right?
Yeah, cool.
But how sort of unfinished were they? I mean, were some like real, just like the skeletal bones of it, and some kind of quite far along?
So most of them were like under 2 minutes long, really, so nothing that would be like a fully finished tune that anyone could DJ with. But they had, some of them were quite fully formed ideas, some of them were quite skeletal, sort of like a spectrum of stuff that was like, some were really, really like filled with ideas but really short, and then some that maybe were a bit longer but weren't really doing too much.
How important is the album format for you?
So when I was getting into Jungle, I was mostly consuming mixes, really, and compilations. Because with compilations, I noticed you could find out more different artists rather than being like, this is one artist's body of work. So, and also before that, when I was consuming music, it was mostly through like music TV channels like Channel U or The Box or MTV Bass. And like the album format didn't really exist on those formats. It was just like, this is the single that you know. So it was mostly about that, really. Albums, like, I didn't really get into until a lot later in my life, where I was sort of, like, starting to, like, get into, like, full bodies of work more so than, like, trying to piece together single pieces of tunes. And also, I guess, because of In Jungle, a lot of artists never really made albums, so you sort of didn't have as much importance on it, really. Even to this day, like, a lot of the artists on Future Retro London have never had an album out in any format. So I think sometimes within our music, because it's so DJ focused, it's mostly just about 12s and EPs, really, and maybe, I guess, compilations too.
I mean, maybe it's because I'm a lot older, but for me, like, I kind of feel that albums are really important. They kind of, I don't know, they I don't know, I just like to sort of sink my teeth into albums, and they give like a sort of wider range of an artist. But I mean, do you think that's important, or is that just me being way old?
I mean, I think it's true, because like some artist albums in Drum Bass Jungle are really good in the way that it sort of gave them the space to sort of more explore their sound, or like even to try other styles. But I still feel like, I guess, because this scene is so based around singles, some of the best music from this scene have come out of like just regular old 12 inches. I think that a lot of artists still very much in like a one track frame of like, I'm making this tune. It's not really based around any kind of body of work. This is what I'm making in the moment, and I'm just going to put it out and see if it sticks. So I think it really depends, I guess, on the style of music and I guess the way people enjoy it as well. Because I feel like a lot of people into drum and bass and jungle for a lot of time have also been DJs as well. So they may not have been necessarily also as like focused on like bodies of work in the way that maybe in like pop and rock and R&B and hip hop, it's like the album is the main way for the artist to get their music out there. And then the singles come out of the album really. Whereas here, it's just the singles is the starting point really for most musicians.
Do you have any favorite albums in like jungle drum and bass?
I would say Black Secret Technology by a guy called Gerald.
That's an album.
Yeah, it's a great one. Oof. I'd probably say Timeless by Goldie, of course. Wormhole by Russian Obstacle, even though that's not necessarily my style of music, I always found the production and the ideas on that album to be absolutely amazing. Balance of the Force by Boomerang. I guess maybe it was more of a compilation in the album, but Champion Jungle Sound by Kemet Crew, that one is also very fundamental to my style of music. And, oh yeah, Parallel Universe by Four Hero, that one is also really good. Yeah, I mean, there are quite a few albums I have and really like, but I feel like I could quicken name like the tunes off the albums I like more so than like the actual albums themselves.
I mean, one thing that some of those producers you mentioned did, not so much Ed Rush and Obstacle, but, you know, certainly like on Timeless and Guy Called Gerald, is, you know, when it came to an album, they got in various extra singers, and like Four Hero got in, you know, not so much on Parallel Universe, but on latest albums, they got in like loads of musicians and they kind of like tried to really make like an album concept. Is that something you could see yourself doing?
Maybe. I mean, maybe that I've got this first album out of the way. If I was to do one, maybe a solo one, I think maybe it'd be a bit more like trying to push my production process. Because I think in this album, I was very much keen on like people already know me for me and what I like. So I'd rather just give like an elevated version of that more so than like I'm going to do something completely different and then completely alienate my fan base. So I felt like, and also the idea of like having a platform like Hyperdub, I sort of felt like it would be much more in my favor to sort of present myself as I am, rather than to try and like veer off from what I sort of know and am known for in this release. So maybe going forward in the future, if I ever did consider an album again, I'd probably use it as an example, as a situation to try and, I don't know, do different kinds of styles. I mentioned in the interview with Sean Reynaldo, because I did an EP on Future Retro London earlier this year called Scorched Earth, where I didn't really mention what that release was about. I basically came from the idea of like jungle nowadays can maybe be a bit too defined in terms of like the sounds you put into a tune. Whereas for me, I guess jungle is just mostly the break beats and the tempo. You could do anything on top of it, really. It could still be jungle. But like a lot of my music up until that point, I guess, played into, I guess, what you would call the tropes of what you would consider a jungle tune, whether it's like the atmospheric pads or like the Red Groove samples or the Regga Sound Class samples or like just standard 808 bass drums or whatever. And I was just like, you could put absolutely any sounds on top of jungle and it'll still be jungle. So I wanted to try that out in Scorched Earth, but I sort of wanted to sort of keep it to like a modest, I guess, size, just in case like you invest your whole self into this concept, which then doesn't pay off. But like people seem to like that EP, so I think maybe if I was doing that project, probably spin off of that.
I think you mentioned in that interview with Sean you wanted to you think of doing an album one day that incorporated more like modern production elements. I think you mentioned Hessel Audio. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so like citing like labels like Hessel Audio, Time Dance, Liberty Sound, that sort of 130 UK techno stuff that I do really like, but like I guess I never really heard anyone bringing that into like a jungle context.
See, we were talking about like new things like kind of Liberty Sound and how and Hessel Audio, and how would that work with like jungle, do you reckon?
Pitch it up, put over breaks, approach the tunes structure in a completely different way, because I always liked how with Sully tunes, it's sort of like sound could sort of do anything in the tune and it doesn't really matter. It's sort of like a playground for the sounds to really sort of do whatever they want, to change, to morph, to evolve, to bounce off each other. And they do that a lot. And I found those 130 BPM tunes where it's like you sort of don't know what sound is going to do or where it's going to go during the track, or like it might just appear once and then it's completely vanished. I sort of felt like that kind of approach would be a bit more interesting to do, because I found a lot of my tunes were quite linear, and like a sound would come, it would do its thing, then it goes, and then another sound would come, and it would do its thing, and it goes. Not really sort of like pushing it in the way that I guess they do in the 130 techno scene that I do check for, but haven't really gotten involved in. I'd sort of like look on it as a passerby to see what they're doing, really.
Do you sort of plan your music before you make it? I mean, do you sort of wake up thinking that'll be a good, you know, that'll be a good tune? Or do you sort of like just sit down at your computer and see what comes to you?
I usually go in with some sort of idea, whether it's just like a riff I thought of in the shower, or like a random sample I came across, like browsing like YouTube videos, or even just like a few times, because I used to work for a radio company as a web developer, and every now and then I'd hear like a pop tune on the radio and I'd sort of try and imagine if that would make sense in the jungle context. So inspiration could come from anywhere, really, but I think usually I'd have to have some sort of source of inspiration as a starting point, because I feel like if I just went into like a studio session, it's completely like, let's hope for something good to happen. A lot of times I don't think it really does. It's almost to be a starting point for me anyway.
I was interested in what you were talking about, the sort of the idea of Hesse and Liberty and that kind of thing, which would be a very sort of futuristic idea. Because, I mean, your music is often and incorrectly, I think, called retro. I mean, your label's called Future Retro. Does the retro tag kind of bother you, or is it just like, yeah, well, whatever?
Call it what you want. I understand it, because a lot of times the music I make is played alongside music from like 30 years ago. I guess to the untrained ear, you might not even be able to tell the difference, like which tune is old and which tune is new. And also because, I guess, even though I do sample new stuff, I'll sample up old stuff as well, in terms of like the Rare Groove samples, the House Acapellas, the Sound Clashes from like the 80s and 90s. I guess in a way there is a lot of revivalism in my music, but it's not the whole thing. But I understand why for a lot of people it may be that case, in the way that like you have people now making hip hop that sounds like the 90s, and it's like you could say that's retro too, even though I guess anything that is made in the now, I guess by default I'll probably say is modern, in the way that like the culture surrounding it, as much as you can try and force it into the 90s culture, is very much a product of the now, because people are using like modern day DAWs, they're using like production techniques, whether they think so or not, that like weren't readily or even at all available at the time when the producers were making that style of music at the time. And I guess also I think that sometimes I think people may put themselves into the music in ways that may not be conscious to them, and people's beings nowadays is very much informed by the technology and society we live in. So I think that as much as you can really try to be retro, I think a lot of times you're going to unwillingly or unconsciously put in some modernity into your music, whether or not that's your priority or not. So I get why people would say music is retro, because of what it's inspired by, of the other kinds of music that it sort of stands alongside. But I mean, now more so than ever, I'm not as keen on being so retro, I guess, especially because I know there's other people doing the more retro stuff better than me, so I'll just leave them to it and I'll just do my thing and sort of like allow us to coexist in the same spaces.
And you've released a lot of music over the years, but is there one track that you would play for someone to explain what it is that you do?
That's a good question, actually. I guess maybe there's a track I did with another guy called Devno on an EP I had on Lobsterium, and the track's called Anytime. And I think that tune maybe, I guess, represents a lot of the sounds I usually like to have in my tunes, I guess.
I want to ask, like, so last week or a couple of weeks ago, you were in the news for DJing at a wedding alongside Aphex Twin.
Oh, yeah, and Luke Vibert as well.
Oh, yeah, Luke, yeah. What the hell? What was all that about?
Like, yeah. So basically, so the whole backstory is, so when I played at an event in Bristol in January this year, there was this guy there called Andy. I think he knew of my music, but he'd never seen me play before. And I met him and a friend of his called Hector, and like they were both really into what I guess I was doing. And at the same time, they're good friends with Luke Vibert, and it was actually his birthday that day, and he played that event too. So I think they came mainly for him, but I was there as well. And I think they really enjoyed my set, and then they started coming to more of my sets after that. And then I remember one weekend, Andy, he came to three consecutive sets of mine in a row. And then we were hanging out a bit before the third set, and he was basically saying to me that, like, so I'm getting married in a month, and I've got Aphex Twin and Luke Vibert playing at my wedding, and I'd really like for you to play as well. And I was like, sure. I've never DJed a wedding before, but, like, I guess with a lineup like that, you can't really say no. So he told me the date, and it was actually the same day I was playing a festival in London called All Points East. And his wedding was in Stoke-on-Trent, which I think is like quite up north, just a bit south of Manchester. So right after All Points East was finished, I basically had to cycle straight to Euston Station. I got the last train to Stoke-on-Trent, and I got there just in time to catch Aphex Twin's set. I basically missed most of Luke Vibert's set, unfortunately, but like I called Luke's set, I met him briefly. I didn't want to impede too much on his personal space, because I imagine he gets a lot of strange people approaching him and just waxing poetically about how much he means to them. So I just sort of like kept it very brief in my interactions and stuff. And then I played after him. I played like 2.5 hours of jungle. And it was really funny because like by that point, everyone had either gone back to like the hotel they were staying to sleep, or they just stayed up and like got a mashup on like booze or pills. So it was like very funny because like I'm completely teetotal and sober. So I'm used to, I guess, clubs.
So yeah, so you DJing at this wedding after Aphex Twin, were there like, did you make any compromise? Did you tone it down a bit, or did you just go right?
No, because Andy was basically like, he's a big fan of my jungle music, basically wanted me to play like any other venue. So I played pure jungle the whole time and a bit of hardcore as well. And it was really good fun, but I guess I'm not really used to like wedding settings when everyone starts to like let loose towards the end. It was quite funny though, I really enjoyed it.
Did people sort of grands start dancing?
A few uncles were dancing, yeah, I'd say that. I think the grands, I guess maybe they couldn't handle Aphex Twin set properly.
That's amazing. So I just want to ask you one more thing, which occurred to me. Who would you get to DJ your wedding?
It would have to be my mates. It would have to be like me, Dward, Sully, Coco, Equinox, Devnell, Harmony, the crew basically, because like they know exactly what I want to hear and they would bring that in abundance, so it'd have to be them.
Well, that sounds like an amazing party. Hopefully one day it can happen. Oh, you might already be married. I got no idea.
Nothing here, mate.
So. okay, well, look, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Yeah, the album's great. The album is out, what do we say, the September
September 20th.
September the...
Yeah, I actually got my copy the other day. Let me show you.
I really like the artwork, actually. I think it's really good.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I actually did it myself. Well, I did it myself. It was actually artwork I found, and I was going to use it for Future Retro, but the artists of that release didn't like it. So I was like, all right, I'll keep it for myself at some point, and... Here we are.
Do you know what I like about it particularly is that it's not sort of your typical jungle or drum and bass sleeve, you know? It's like very different, kind of gives like a different, I don't know what impression it gives really. Two bears, I think, like had a honey pot, I think.
Yeah, I'll give her a honey pot and then it smashes at the back.
Ah, it's nice. Well, look, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much, man. This was good fun.
All right, cheers, then.
All right, take it easy, man.
Bye.